Welcome to the Finding the Magic podcast, where books come alive. I'm Tricia Copeland, a fiction author and host of this show. If you love books, finding great reads, and hearing about the story behind the story directly from the authors, this is the place for you. Whether you like fantasy, science fiction, dystopian, or romance titles, I think you'll find something to love in my playlist. Listen in to discover something magical about a book or two today. Welcome, Alice.
Hi.
Today I have Alice Hanoff. She is a YA fantasy author, and the whole series, and I'm going to get it wrong. Tell me, heart, hand, head, sorcery, magic.
The head.
I don't know. I'm close. Tell me what the name of the series.
The series is called The Head, the Heart, and the Air.
The Head, the Heart, and the Air. And the air is like, I think, H-E-I-R, correct?
Yes. Like an heir to a throne as opposed to the air we breathe.
Okay. And do you have your books in front of you? Because your covers are amazing.
I can grab them. They're just over there on my shelf. Including the new one that isn't out yet.
Ooh. We get some bonus material here.
I have all my covers because it's a series, so they all match. So I have my prequel, The Spare Who Became the Heir. My first book, the debut, The Head, the Heart, and the Air. The second in the series is Broken Sons. The third is The Heir Rises. Again, heir like heir to the throne.
Yes.
And the last one is The Last True Heirs, which releases on April 2nd.
Ooh, congratulations. How exciting.
Thank you.
I love your colors and
first
the graphics.
One.
They're amazing.
Yeah, they all match together. If you look really closely, you'll see that the image inside one book matches whatever sorcerer power is on the previous book.
Oh, okay.
So it's easiest to see in the first two, where you can see, or I guess the second and third, where you can see on the third one, there is a fire scene inside the head, and it's a fire cover before.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, we're going to jump in and learn all about your world and your characters. So start us out with the series beat.
So the series, my elevator pitch is always Royal Medieval Europe meets mythology with sorcerers.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So it kind of gives you the rundown of it. It takes place mm-hmm. in the medieval world. There are royalties, so it's got different kingdoms and things, and there's magic because there are sorcerers in the world. So the premise of the book is that my main character is a sorceress princess, Alex, and she has been sent away because years ago her grandfather murdered her mother, and so she was hidden away, and she was hidden by her father, clearly is a prince or king once the book starts taking place. And his best friend is also a king, and his general hid her. But then something went wrong and the general's house was burned down and she disappeared. And so all these years later, her cousin, who is also a sorcerer, the general whose house she was at, and the crown prince of her father's best friend, so like their kingdom's prince, have been sent to retrieve her. And those three were picked in particular because the crown prince and her were friends. And so they spent a lot of time together when they were children. And him and his mother are kind of the only people alive who remember her a lot as a child. And it's really, they can't send the queen to go find her. So they send the prince, the general as his guard, and her cousin, because in her particular line of sorcerer powers, the Merlin line can detect kin. So they feel when someone who's related to them is nearby. They kind of like have a second sense for it. And because of that, they send her cousin. And so the beginning of the book takes place where the last short story in my prequel, which is a bunch of short stories about the main characters, the last short story in her is the general, the prince, and her cousin being sent to go get her. And then the book starts the day after. Like literally kind of like we get them when this story ends, this picks up the next morning. Because in the end here, they get sent to they kind of like realize where she is. And the general's like, we got to go to the bar. And they're like, why? And he's like, because no one talks more than drunk people. So he starts buying everyone drinks. And the beginning of the book is her and her best friend hunting, complaining about how hungover they are because the big old red haired guy at the bar kept buying everyone drinks. So it starts with her being discovered in the woods, and she's grown up in like a lost boy type camp woods where it's a bunch of orphan boys that all like live together and take care of each other. And the only like her, the son of the general who was guarding her when the fire happened is still with her, and he refused to join the camp if they didn't take her too. So she's essentially the camp's little sister. And it starts with them realizing someone is near the camp and then having to defend themselves against the people who are coming to find her. And she's been hidden. The reason that no one has ever found her is she has a magical pendant that her uncle gave her mother that disguises her. So she looks like a boy when she's wearing that pendant, which is why she fits in with the boys so well. And so they come and they find her. And then the majority of the first book is her journey of discovery, because she grew up feral, essentially, in this camp, gets sent home or brought home, we'll say, and now has to, that whole discovery we all go through in our teenage years, where she has to figure out who she wants to be and live up to the expectations of her father and her kingdom. But also, she's a sorceress, so she has these magical powers that, because they came in too early for her, they should have come in at 17, 18, they came in at 10, they're tied to her emotions. And who's more emotional than teenagers, right? So every time she gets angry, something catches on fire. Every time she cries, it pours rain. So all of the like different magical abilities she has are tied to a different emotion. And so she's trying to manage this in a kingdom where everything is making her emotional and is just trying to come to terms with who she's supposed to be, but also figuring out who she wants to be and how who she is as a half sorceress, half human fits into this world where like everybody is human except for like her cousin and her uncle and her.
Oh, interesting. So not all the people in the kingdom are sorcerers. Is it just the lines of the prince and princesses, or?
Just her, actually, because I'll show you on the map that I have in the book, you can see there's this whole part of the world is the human world. And then up here, this isolated island is where the sorcerers live. So only a handful of sorcerers have moved over to the human world. It was originally her mother and her uncle, and then it became her cousin and her as well. So there are a ton of sorcerers, but they all live in their own thing and want nothing to do with the humans. It's just in her little group, they are the ones who were the sorcerers who came to the human world. So living in the human world, it's her, her cousin, and her uncle, and that's it.
Okay.
And so some people are still suspicious of the sorcerers, and so her magic can be problematic for her at times.
Did she know she was a princess all along? Did she know who she was? Or is this a revelation when the people find her?
No, she knew 100% who she was. Like, if you read the prequel where it has the short stories, she gets into an argument with her older, like, guard who was being disguised as her brother. Like, they tell everybody that he's her older brother, and that's why they're together there. But she knows who she is, and he knows who she is, and he knows he's got to keep her safe until her grandfather dies, because he was 7 years older than her. So when they arrived, he was 12 and she was almost 5, so he's well aware. He was already being trained to be a knight with his dad and everything like that, so he was very much aware of the situation and how critical it was to keep her secret. And so he's been protecting her the entire time, but she's fully aware of who she is. She's fully aware that she's a half sorceress and that everyone knew her mother was a sorceress. And so she knows all that, but they don't realize at this time in the story that her grandfather has actually passed away. So they think that the risk of her being found and killed is still very real at the beginning of the book. It's not until the prince and the general and the sorcerer show up and tell her, no, he's dead now.
Okay.
That then she can kind of like breathe a sigh of relief that, okay, that big threat that I've been hiding my entire life from is gone. But at the same time, that's overwhelming, right? It's the whole feeling of everything is different now than it was yesterday and having to come to terms with that.
And how old is she when the book starts or when they find her?
It depends. It sounds funny because in the original one that I'm holding in my hand, she's 17, but I aged it up a little bit because the themes are getting a little bit darker as I go. And so I was worried that when you have a 17-year-old, sometimes, 13, 14-year-olds will read it. And I'm like, the themes that are coming up in this book and book 4 are a little bit heavier, a little bit darker. So I've aged her up to be 19 at this point now, just in order to keep it a little, I don't want parents getting mad at me because I'm dealing with darker themes, but I'm a parent of a 15-year-old, and I believe they should be introduced to these kinds of topics and themes and that at a younger age. So she's either 17 or 19, depending on which edition you have. but still at that age where very much discovering yourself, not having a clue really who you are or who you're supposed to be. I feel like most of us don't figure that out till at least our mid
20s. Yeah, definitely. And it keeps evolving still.
It does, exactly. Even as an adult, you're figuring things out. And that's why we all have midlife crises and things, so that we can redo everything we wanted to do when we're at an age where we stop caring about people's judgments and things like that.
Fun. Okay, so that sets up book one. She's discovering herself. She's coming into her role. It's sort of a new life, learning to control her magic. Talk to me a little bit about the magic, because you hinted on I'm a big Merlin person.
Grab my poster.
I love the Crystal Cave and all of that. So
right behind me is my poster of my sorcerers. This was also on my website for people who can't see it. So there are 10 sorcerer lines in my world. Each of them has, the way that the sorcerers work in my world is that your mother and your father are both sorcerers. So you're given a power from each of the sorcerers. And then when you become of age and it's clear which powers you have, you get one or two of these sorcerer line marks burned like a tattoo almost on your neck. So when you meet a sorcerer, you know what their powers are because you know where they come from. And I say one or two because let's say both your parents were Celtics and they both gave you Celtic. You're just a double Celtic, but you don't have two leaves. You just have one. But then people know you're only Celtic in that. And so I have 10 different lines like this. And the way that it works, we'll do the hierarchy and then we'll do the lines. So the way the world works is there's normal sorcerers. And then every one of these 10 lines has a Titan. The Titan is the most powerful sorcerer of that generation. They're essentially the one who's in charge. They're the one who helps train the younger ones. They keep their powers, like they keep their line in line, essentially. They also are part of a committee who works with the head or the heart. Hence the name, the head, the heart, and the air. The head and the heart are the two most powerful sorcerers born in every generation. And they will fight to the death to see who wins and gets to be in charge. The head is known for being very violent and very logical. The heart is more ruled by their emotions and tends to have more of the helping powers, whereas the head tends to be more like the violent powers, like Aries and Salem and that. And so the Titans are then responsible for answering the call of the head when they need stuff. And they also are the ones who report to the head for their line. If there's a problem happening in the line or things are going wrong, they will go to the head. Like, there's a second map in my book that has the territories and layouts of all of the different 10 lines. So if there's like grievances coming because let's say the Poseidon is bothering the mystics, then the head has to step in and interfere, but it'll be those two Titans who bring that to them. And so the 10 lines that I have is first, there's a lot, I love Greek mythology. So there's a lot of Greek mythology. There's Ares, Cassandra, Hades, and Poseidon. So I think you can guess, just if you know anything about Greek mythology, those powers. Ares is chaos and violence. So it gives you the ability to turn other people chaotic and violent. Cassandra is one of the most important ones. It is healing and it is premonition. That is one of the two that Alex has. So my main character is Alex. Her real name is Elizabeth, but she went by Alex in the woods because her middle name is Alexandria. So she chooses to keep Alex because it's the only name that feels right. Poseidon is water and weather. And Hades is everything having to do with the dead. So speaking to the dead, communicating with the dead, predicting when people die, that kind of thing. And so those are the first four. Then we have the Celtics, which are clearly nature and peace-based. They're the opposite of Aries in that they can bring people peace. So if you're really anxious, not if a Celtic touches you, you suddenly feel really happy and calm. And you're like, oh, I feel so nice now. Mira. We'll do Merlin last because it's a tricky one. Mira is the earth power. So people who can move earth, dirt, that kind of thing. The mystics are based on that 90s Anastasia movie Rasputin. So they can like, if anyone remembers the movie where he sings and he's like falling apart in the cartoon. Yeah. This line is based on him being the leader. And they have the ability to read minds. And sorcerers in my world do something called cracking. That's their teleportation where they picture a spot and they end up there. Like imagine if you pictured your backyard, you just cracked your backyard kind of thing. But mystics can travel farther than normal sorcerers can as well. They don't need to actually have been to a place. If you wanted to crack to a place as a sorcerer, you have to have seen it so you can visualize it in your head to go there. Mystics can look at a picture or touch somebody and have them visualize a place and go there. So they have a lot easier moving around abilities. Salem, I say, is descended from the Salem witches. So, you know, because clearly everyone who was tortured and burned in the witch trials were not witches, because the real ones left. And so they are a line that is controls explosions and fire. And then Tiere is my animal line. So they all have to do with animals. They can communicate with them. And the strongest of the Tiere lines can turn into an animal as well. The Titans absolutely can turn into an animal. Most Tiere sorcerers can turn into some kind of an animal. The strongest can sometimes have a second animal as well. And there's a joke that runs through the line that you do not name your child after a mythical creature. A lot of Tieres are naming their kids after animals. You don't name them after mythical ones because it usually ends up bad if your child has a mythical animal. And then the 10th line, which is the baby line, the newest one, is Merlin. He showed up. All these sorcerer lines have been around for like 17 generations. Merlin just showed up 3-4 generations ago. So he's the newest one. And the way that his line works is that there is no specific powers. If you picture all these lines as a book where each line is a chapter, Merlin's just grabbed like a bunch of random pages out of the book. So the way Merlin line works is you have stronger ability and random powers that you're born with. So this is the other line that Alex is. She is descended from Merlin. He was her great grandfather. And so her abilities are kind of all over the place. Normally she wouldn't have fire and plant and water together, but because she's a Merlin, she does. And so it makes it a little more challenging for her because instead of having this small subset of magic she had to learn to control, she has opposite magic that isn't common. Most people, there are very few fire, water sorcerers or chaos, peace sorcerers, because those lines don't tend to get along. But so she has to control fire and water, and she controls like plants and like hail and things like that. So it makes it a little bit more challenging for her because her powers are just all over the place. But wow. I really like my source. I have a lot of rules in my magic world, and I know how all of them work. And I am really crazy about the world building because I really like it.
Yeah, that's super cool. I love it. That's a lot of fun. And yeah, I would definitely get one of your posters. It's a very cool idea.
I do have it in the back of the book too. Just like not the exact poster, but a summary of each of the lines, their right, color, yeah, their line mark, their powers. Because I know, like, I'm a big fan of back matter in books. I have so much back matter in my books. I have kingdom guides, so you know who comes from which kingdom, including like names and when they were born, and there's family trees of the main characters. And I have the crests of the kingdoms in here as well, so you can see there's the Dayton family tree, and then the crest for Warren, and then I also have a pronunciation guide, and here's the sorcerer information in the back.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Fine.
Because and a glossary of like the sorcerer terms. Like I make up some words in my book, and my family's German, so a lot of them have come from like German words. So Hexe, for example, is German for witch, but it's my term for a sorcerer grandmother. And okay, a Hexen is the grandfather. And then my favorite is Feflux, which is a word I made up as a little kid that I now use as their F word. So they say Feflux when they get angry because it's funny and it makes me laugh to say it. But it worked out really well because it gave me my own word for them to curse with that, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Yeah.
It's this curse word. So I made sure I had a glossary for that because I do have some strange terminology, and it explains like what the head is and Titans and that too. So when you hit it, if you forget, it's always in the back because I think it's so important to have that information on hand when you're reading a book.
Right. Very cool. How did you come up with this idea? Did it just like pop into your mind one day? Obviously it seems to be growing, but
it does grow. The original, I actually have been mulling with it since I was like 15. The original thought process was I was one of those girls in high school who had all guy friends and we went camping a lot. And then one day there were like 10 guys and me, and we were sitting in this like provincial park near where I lived. I still remember it was Rondeau Provincial Park. We were sitting there around a campfire and I'm looking at my guy friends and I'm like, what if we lived in the woods? And that's where the camp with Alex started. And then it just grew. Because I'm like, well, why would a girl be living in the woods with boys? I'm like, oh, well, what if she's hiding? And I'm like, okay, well, what's she hiding from? I know, her crazy grandfather murdered her mother because she's a sorceress. And that's just like, boom. My brain just went on with that. I grew up on an island as a child. So I spent a lot of my childhood running around a forest because there was no cable. And this was before the internet. And there was nowhere to go. So we just played outside in the woods because there was literally nowhere to go when you're stuck on an island. So it was great for my imagination, though. And to this day, I still have that imagination of like an 8-year-old.
I think it's a little bit more advanced than that. You have all these lines of magic.
I still have the imagination of the 8-year-old, but now I have the logic of an adult to go with that imagination. So it helps.
Yeah, you can put all those plots together and make a book. So lay out your different books for me. So book one is her discovering who she is. What happened? I mean, obviously you're not going to give away any spoilers.
So book one is her discovering what she is. And the other part of the other half of the book is that she comes home and her dad's like, great, you're home. I'm so glad that you're safe. By the way, you're getting of that age where we have to find you a guy in the next year or two. So he's like, I'm going to start introducing you to some of the guys in the kingdoms and we're going to see how that goes. It does not go well for a girl who grew up in the woods who kissed one boy and had her big brother, Stefan, go after him like he was going to bury him alive in the woods. The girl has no experience with guys and she has no idea when any of them are flirting with her. And it's really funny because boys are hitting on her and she's just like, okay, bye. And they're like, what? And her friends are like, he's hitting on you. And she's like, what? Him? Huh? And then the one she doesn't like, who she recognizes hitting on her, she shoves somebody into the water. She slaps a guy for touching her when she didn't want to get touched. She punches another one. She is not going to tolerate anybody she doesn't like touching her. And so she's trying to meet these guys and that while she's also trying to find out the secrets about her mother, because her mother died, but no one is quite sure why her grandfather killed her. Like, she's always believed it's because she was a sorceress. So she's busy trying to find her mother's like secrets and history while figuring out her magic and trying to find a guy. And the prince that she's the most interested in is the one she's childhood friends with. And he is notorious for putting his foot in his mouth.
Oh.
Which is delightful. And I will say, it is said in his point, like his point of view is in here as well. And it is made very clear in his point of view. He has feelings for her, but it's hard for him because she was supposed to marry his brother. Oh. And he struggles a lot with that because part of him feels like he feels guilt for his brother's death as well, because it was his birthday that his brother died, and his brother died to protect her as well. So he kind of feels like if he benefits from his brother's death, that's kind of twisted. So despite having feelings for her, it's really hard for him to get that right because of this. But so that's this book. And then the book ends when she, and this book starts where she goes to start working on her magic here. So here she's finding her place in her kingdom and trying to figure things out with guys and stuff like that. This one is her trying to figure out her magic. And so she goes off with her uncle to get help to learn her powers because she's worried something goes wrong and she's scared that her powers are going to hurt people. And so she goes to learn her magic in this, but it's not going well. The lessons she's being taught are very harsh and quite abusive. So this one gets a little bit darker in that how she's being taught to use her magic is becoming manipulative and it's not the nicest way. She meets a new friend in this book, where we get to meet our morally gray character, Griffin, who is a sorcerer who comes from the Forbidden Lands and helps her because her uncle is terrible at teaching her anything. So Griffin wanders over from the Forbidden Lands and starts to help her in secret because their families knew each other for many years and don't get along. So he's not telling his family he's helping. And he's like, don't tell your uncle I'm helping you because he's not going to like that. And so the other part is that because she's now with her uncle, Aaron and her father are coming to get her because they've realized that they don't like what's going on. And so they're coming to save her. So we get the rescue mission for the princess as well, where you've got the father and the prince and her guard trying to come and save her from the decision she made to go and learn to use her magic because the deal she made her hidden. So they can't find her. They have to go and figure out where she is. And it's a lot of work to figure out where she is because she gave an oath to her uncle that she would train with him and not, you know, leave until she's safe, like her magic is safe to be around people with. But so because of that, the humans can't find her and they don't know where she is exactly. So it's a lot of work for them to go and find her, which is great for them because one of the issues that a lot of people have with Aaron in this book is that he's kind of a very peaceful prince and his dad is literally the king of war. So it's like, he's always been said to not be a good enough prince. So in this book, when he's like, I'm going to go and find her, it's almost like him stepping into his role as prince as well, where we get to see his perspective. And we get this book is the two point of views, Aaron and Alex. And then this one, we get Griffin's point of view as well, because he hangs around because he's delightful and he's morally gray. And he really has a thing for our princess, which, you know, again, she doesn't notice. He's hitting on her in every scene. And she's just like, what? Or she's like, why do you say things like that? Stop it. He's just like, come on, girl. So it's really fun. And so this is her learning how to master her magic, or at least, you know, learn to use her magic to a point that she's safe to be around humans. Because one of the things you learn in the first book too is that the sorcerers live to be about 300. So what would be considered their puberty lasts until about age 75. Okay. So they're learning to wield their magic until they're like between 50 and 75. So she's trying to manage her magic and not be a danger to the people that she is around every day and the people she loves. And so that's a challenge for her. And that's something she really has to work on at this one. And then in our third one, it jumps ahead. The 8 months or a year where things have been resolved from this book. And then in this one, the sorcerers in the Forbidden Lands have finally figured out that she exists and are starting to show, pay attention to her and come after her. And that's where, like, book one and two kind of are one story. It's her learning to wield her magic, finding herself. And then the rest of the books, so 3, 4, what will be 5, 6, and 7, are all about this. It's keeping her safe from the sorcerers, figuring out how to deal with the fact that for the first time in like 1,000 years, the sorcerer's attention is on the human world and not in a good way. And so in this one, there's a lot of battles. There's a lot of fighting sorcerers and sorcerers coming after humans and coming after different kingdoms. And Alex is still trying to figure out all the other stuff that she's been working on because it's only like a year later. So she's still learning her magic. She's still trying to figure out how to be the princess everyone wants her to be in that. But now on top of it, they're being attacked by sorcerers and they're trying to figure out all the chaos that comes with that. And she's still trying to unravel all the secrets that were her mother. Because as the stories keep going, you learn there are more and more secrets in her family and in her like line from her dad and her mom and that. So she's always trying to figure out what is going on there and figuring out all these secrets that keep popping up as she's trying to learn to wield her magic and just, you know, live her life and no one will let her.
That sounds super fun. And I'm sensing that the series is ongoing then. It's continuing.
Book 5 is coming out in September. And book 6, I'm about 75% done writing. So the goal is to have book 6 and 7 come out next year.
Fun. That sounds awesome. This world sounds amazing. And I think I'm going to have to like grab the first book and dive in. Tell me, and I'm trying to figure out, so is it first person through the different characters or is it third person?
Third person. And okay. Then there's just a different point of view. So I'm a fan of third person because I feel like I'm being told the story. So that's why they're written in third person because it's the one that I like to read. So that's how I've set it up like that. But I know some people.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can get so many different viewpoints that way and hear the whole story. When you have that many characters and that much going on,
it's like, a lot of characters.
A first person story would be a challenge, right? You would only get their perspective.
Like my main character group is 10. That's the like dominant main group where it's her and it's Prince Aaron and then it's her two brothers, essentially Michael and Stefan being the general's son, and then Michael being the boy she found in the woods when she was 6. No, she was 5 and he was 6. He was covered in blood, and so she brought him home because what else are you going to do with a boy you find in the woods covered in blood with a head injury? You bring them home, of course you do. And so those are her main characters. And then she gets two ladies maids, Jessica and Edith. And Jessica is actually the general of Dayton, so Stefan's sister. Like the general thought he was out with his daughter when the fire happened, and he thought all of his children had perished, including Stefan. So she brings back this general's son, and it's really funny because she teases him and she's like, oh, aren't you happy to see your dad? He's like, we greeted each other. And she's just like, dude, because they're so like stoic and serious people, all of them. They're just like, all the time, they're so stoic. It's just like, did you miss your daddy? Did you talk to your daddy? And he's like, we greeted one another. And she's just like, whereas she sees her dad and they both start sobbing and like hugging each other. And he sees his dad and they're like, and you're just like, dudes, come on, Wafners. So the Wafners are notorious for being totally serious all the time. And so her lady's maid, Jessica, is the very serious and prim and proper one. And Edith is the daughter of her father's general, so the general of war. And she is like wild. She's that, you know, tomboy that everybody is like, you have to calm down or you're never going to get married. And her dad's like, she doesn't have to get married. I don't think anybody's going to be good enough for her. And so there's always the joke that she's her dad's favorite and no one's ever going to be good enough for her because she's her dad's favorite and he's the general and everyone's afraid of her. And she's like, whatever. And just runs around with the princess. She's like, I get to be friends with the princess. I don't care. And then there's her cousin. And so we have all these really fun characters that are all very different personality wise, but all have really great reasons for being in the story and all have like an important role to play as the story unfolds. And like I knew that from the beginning. Like I'm one of those people who I have things in book one and a prequel I haven't used yet, and I'm in book 6, so I'm a fan of let's sprinkle all the stuff throughout my series. And then when you go back and you're like, it was there. I have people like reading book 5 now before my editor, like who have read book 5 from editor, and they were like, oh, that's where you use that thing. And I'm just like, I'm a big fan of sprinkling tiny little secrets, like one-liners, where I just, it's a throwaway line in a conversation. And I'm like, that's going to be important in book six. Hope you remember that line. Which I think is a lot of fun, because then if you reread it, you can find all those little nuggets that I've left. And right. I think that's a lot of fun when you're reading a book and you just find all these crazy random things later. And you're like, how did I miss that the first read through?
I'm definitely one of those people that will read a book or a series and then say, oh, I have to go back, because I think, like, you know, you can find so many more of those details littered in, and those make great books and series. So
there's so much fun to leave in there too.
Wow. I can't even imagine. So do you keep like files, or how do you keep up with the whole storyline and everything? Is it just in your head, or do you have
outlines? A spreadsheet, but it's mostly up here.
Okay.
Like, I have a spreadsheet that breaks it down chapter by chapter from when I was doing edits for my editors and that, but I haven't done it now for book four or five, so I don't think I probably will need to do it anymore. But it's one of those things where I'm one of those weird brains that just keeps all of this in my head. And can just, I know what happened in every one of the books. I know the big plot points that happened in the books. I know what's happening in the future books as well. Like, I kind of went in this knowing how it was going to end, and it was just filling in the middle kind of thing. And so I knew, like, big things I wanted to have happen. Like, I knew big items that were coming up in the different books, like the main things that happened in this book. I knew this thing was going to happen, and I knew what happened in book four was going to happen. And I know, like, there's one of them has a labyrinth in it, and I knew there was going to be a labyrinth in it. And then there's a kidnapping in one, and I'm like, I knew that was going to happen. So it's like, I always knew those big points, and it was just a matter of connecting the dots in between them. And with the group of characters that I have and how many mysteries are around, like, it's not just Alex that is trying to discover her past. Like, she found Michael in the woods. Like, they don't know anything about him, so they got to figure out where he came from. And then it's figuring out different characters and the way the kingdoms are run, and Aaron needing to figure out how to be the right prince and things like that. So there's always characters who are trying to learn and discover more about themselves. And it's not just Alex who's growing in this as well, because outside of Stefan, who's like 20, yeah, she's 19, he's like 27. So outside of him being like significantly older, the rest of them are all like in their late teens, maybe like 2021 kind of age. So they're all trying to figure out who they are and deal with everything that's happening in their lives as well. So it's, while it's Alex and Alex's story, and then Aaron and Griffin are the two side ones, mainly with her, who are in this because, you know, there ends up being a bit of a love triangle happening there. There's also the side characters who get their happy endings and who get their growth and who get their story as well as things are progressing there. And we get it from her perspective. But I love when the side characters get their growth and their moment to shine as well. So I make sure that all of my side characters have something revealed or something fun that goes along with them as well.
Fun. And what was the name of the Morally Gray character that you mentioned in the second
book? Griffin.
Griffin. Okay. So he is, so I was getting that hinting of that love triangle there. So it'll be exciting to read and see. Do you have an end? You know, or you want the whole series to end then, yep. Correct? Yep. And how many books? Do you know how many books that's going to be yet, or that's still yet?
It'll be 7, unless I have to break up book 6 and book 7 into 3. Because right now, book 6, I'm already at 100,000 words, and I haven't even hit the last big thing that has to happen. So if it ends up being too large for a book, then I might end up having to make 6 and 7 into 6, 7, 8.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's the story will wrap up with right now with book 7 in my head. But
right.
It just comes down to how big book 6 and 7 end up being. Because right now they're all around 100,000 words, except book 1 is 120 because I expanded it for its 1-year anniversary last year and put back the scenes. I cut it down because at the time the editors I was working with were like, oh, it shouldn't be this long. You should cut it down. So I cut it down based on their advice. And then people complained about two specific things that were mentioned later on, but were removed. So like they were talked about after the fact, and people were so annoyed by that I went back and put those two scenes back in. The big one being a trip Alex takes to Dayton with Aaron. It's one of those cases where her dad is like, She's like, I want to go see Dayton. And her dad's like, okay, great. You can go to Dayton and see it, you know, see if it sparks some of your memories when you were a kid. And then he's like, no, something happened. You can't go. And she's like, but I want to go. And so what does every teenage girl do? She sneaked there. And so she sneaked there with Dayton with Aaron, disguises. They go there and then she disguises as a boy and they go explore Dayton together. And so the aftermath of that was there where it's called the, Aaron gets put on what we refer to, my readers and I refer to as bucket duty, where she gets drunk when they go visit the bar in Dayton. And then he's the one who gets to clean up after her that night. Because it's his mother that assigns the duty, which I find so hilarious, where when they come back and they've been caught, because of course they get caught, Edward cannot discipline his daughter. He hasn't seen her in like 12, 14 years. He's like, I can't say anything wrong. She's my baby girl. And Aaron's mother is like, oh, don't you worry. I have this. She's like, because you might be soft, but I know I'm like my best friend, and she would want there to be consequences. So she punishes Alex and she's like, you know, you're not going anywhere alone and you have to do this and blah, blah, blah. And then she looks at her son and she's just like, I can't punish you. And she looks at her husband. She's like, you deal with him. And so she gets put, she's kind of like grounded for the most part. And then Aaron gets put on bucket duty because his dad is like, you made this mess. You clean up with it. There's no reason her lady's maids have to clean up this mess because you were irresponsible. So literally he gets handed a bucket and he's like, they're like, clean up after her. And I love that because you're just like, look, Crown Prince gets to scrub puke off the floor. And I'm like, it's very entertaining to me, the idea that they're just like, bucket duty. And he's like, what's bucket duty? And then Alex is like, in the corner, throws up. He's like, oh, that's bucket duty. It's like, lovely. This is going to be great. So that scene got put back in. And I think it's one that people got very mad at because it had the first kiss in it. It's a very drunken one. So it's not even a good one. But everyone was very angry they didn't get the drunken one. So I put it back because I listen to the readers. And if they say something needs to be there, I make sure it goes back.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Because, and especially if it was kind of a plot point that you need to know for later context.
It was more fun. People just wanted the kiss. I'm going to be honest with you. Because everything they learned there, it was like the important things were reiterated later. But people really just wanted that scene. And I was like, I will give it to you. If you just want it, have it. I don't care. It's fine. It was a good scene. I was sad to cut it. So I did not take a lot of convincing to get me to put that back in.
Fine. So did some people know about that scene? Or they...
Some readers knew, like I had gone through what ended up being published was like draft 16. So I had some readers who read some different drafts and they were like, oh, I was really sad when you had to cut that. I understand why, but I thought it was so great. And then there were some reviews that I read where people alluded to being annoyed that they didn't get the Dayton scene, where like it was like they went to Dayton and then they came back and we had like the parents giving them the consequences because they were,
but you didn't see what happened in
exactly. And they were like, I want to know what happened in that scene. And like some people were like, I would have given it 5-star, but they took away the scene that I wanted. So now I'm giving it 4 stars and things like that. And it was just like the biggest complaint readers had when I was reading it. It wasn't style. It wasn't plot. It was, I wanted to know what happened to Dayton. I was like, okay, I hear you guys. I'm going to give you back Dayton. And so I put it back in.
Fine. Yeah. That brings out that like how young they are and that they're still like trying to figure out and, you know, they're still getting drunk every once in a while.
Well, I especially liked it because we meet Aaron's guy friends. Like it ties back to the prequels short stories as well, because in the short stories we get Aaron's honor right. And what the honor right is in Dayton, it's where they take like 13, 14 year old boys who want to be knights, who want to be like castle guard knights specifically. And they have to complete what's called the honor right, where a bunch of them get dropped off together in some random small town in the middle of the woods. And they have to find their way back within a week. They have no money. They have no anything. They have to use their wits and they have to like be courteous enough to the townsfolk and that they can get back. But in reality, it's a farce. And Alex is one of the small towns, like disguised as a boy, but she lives by one of these small towns where they get dropped off at. And they know it's a farce because every time the guards bring the boys, they pay extra to the innkeeper, who then puts a bag of food on their horses so they don't starve while they make their way back. And so Alex was given the food by the innkeeper's daughter, who she's friends with, Irma, and she's tying them on the horse dressed as a boy. And Aaron shows up in the stable and like takes the bag from her. And he's like, what did you steal? And starts accusing her of things. And she's like telling him off dressed as a boy. So he has no idea who she is, but she's fully aware of who he is. And he's telling her off. And she's like, you're picking poisonous mushrooms. You're an idiot. And so it's funny because we get to meet those boys that he went on that honor ride with as men in the tavern. Like, so when they're there, his buddies are there and they talk to him the way that friends talk to each other, right? It's one of those times where you get to see Aaron spoken to as Aaron, not as the crown prince of Dayton kind of thing. And the best part is that because he's in war and he's supposed to be wooing the princess, they are like ripping him a new one about the girl who is literally sitting next to him dressed as a boy. And they're like, oh, I hear she's really hot. And I'm like, oh, did you kiss her yet? And he's like, I'm not going to talk about that. And then Alex is next to him. And she's like, well, why not? And he's like, because you don't talk about that kind of stuff with the boys. She's like, no, why haven't you kissed her? And he just like looks at her like, I'm going to kill you later. And the guys are like, yeah. And they're all staring at him. And he's just like, he's like, I hate my life. And that's like the entire conversation with them is them like screaming him out like that. And he's just like, why did I bring her here? This was a bad idea. And she's just laughing hysterically. And then he leaves for like 2 minutes and she gets wasted because his buddies just keep giving her beer. And he tried to get the bartender to like dilute it for her because he knows how strong like the beer is in the kingdom versus in this towns and that. But his buddies noticed and replaced it. And so while he was gone, she drank his beer too. It's like, oops. So he walked away for 1 minute and she drank like 3 beers.
Wow. Yeah. This series sounds so much fun. And yeah, I'm going to have to pick it up right away. Thank you so much for being here. Tell everyone where we can find you.
Okay. So you can find me at alicehanoff.com, which is my website. I'm also on Instagram and TikTok as Alice Hanoff Author. And I will say I consider my books to be upper YA. So there are themes and things brought up that are a little more adult. If 100% clean Fade to Black is your thing, I'm coming out with an omnibus in May. That'll be 100% Fade to Black, where I've gone in and removed any of the more romantic, like, physical romantic type things, and I'm getting it completely out so that it lowers that age a little bit for the people who prefer that kind of thing as well. And on the other side, I'm making a more adult version of it. So if people prefer the more adult version or the completely Fade to Black version, I will have both of those coming out as an omnibus, and after the Kickstarter runs, they'll be on my website as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm just learning about this, and so I just talked to an author, like Liz Shipton. I don't know if you know her, but I'm just learning about this, like making books. Like, she had a YA series that she added extra love scenes to make them a little bit more racy and spicy and new adult rather than the YA versions. But she has them listed as like the same title. Are you doing the same title for them? Just different
versions? I am, because the books are only going to be available from me. So therefore, okay, I am doing it. Like, they're going to be the same, but it's literally, like, on my Kickstarter, it's very clear, spicy Fade to Black. Like, one is blue, one is red. So everything that deals with the spicy is red. Everything that deals with the Fade to Black is blue. And then once I have them in my website store, it'll be the same thing. Fade to Black will be huge, and spicy will be huge on it to make it very clear. But I would say mine is upper YA, because I do introduce themes like that in it. But I introduce it in a way I want my 15-year-old introduced to it. So, like, my main male character has as little experience as my female character does. So it's introducing things, and I bring up topics of consent later on and things like that. So I'm introducing things in a way that I want my own teenage daughters to read it specifically. And then I just know that some people have different opinions on what they think is spice versus steam versus too much. And I'm really hearing my readers, and I want to give them the opportunity to read things in the way that they are the most comfortable with, which is why I'm doing a Fade to Black and an extra spicy, because I know I have a lot of adult readers who are like, can we have more? Like, I even have some who they read it and they want their kids to read it. And I have one mom in particular where her like 12-year-old son reads it. And I take black post-its and I post it the romance page together. So he knows, skip it, because he has no interest in it. And if there's a kiss, he's like, ugh. So if it's like any kind of romance, I just black post-it note it on it. And he just skips those pages because he's like, I don't want to read it. And then that way, when I send the book to her, she knows that her son has been warned, don't read the kissy parts.
That's awesome. But
this way, I feel like this way everybody can get it at the way that they are most comfortable with. Because, and I'm doing an ebook, paperback, or ebook, plain hardcover, and then like a fancy edition with like sprayed edges and things like that. Because I just feel like we all deserve to read books in the way that we think makes us most comfortable. And I mean, my series is fantastic. It's so much fun. I don't want it to be limited to just like this one tiny segment of people. I want everyone to be able to enjoy it. And I like books that have a little bit of spice in them and that. So I write with a little bit in it, enough to give it a little, but I want to make sure that if someone's uncomfortable with that, they can still read the story just in a different, like in an omnibus where I've taken it all out for them. And then they know that I cared enough to remove it for them so that they can be more comfortable with it.
That is super cool. That's super awesome, because that way, like, an adult could read it with their kid and they could talk about what's going on in the story, and the kid is comfortable, but the adult may get something a little more interesting that makes it.
Exactly. You know, the adult gets the adult parts that they like, and then they still get the entire story with the kids, because I don't take anything out of the adult ones. I add to the adult one, but I remove from the Fade to Black one, just because that I just take out the stuff. But what I add into the spicy one is clearly spice, which is what I'm removing from Fade to Black, so there'd be no point. But right. I am also putting like extra scenes in the omnibus as well, like for the one that's coming out May, which is going to be the prequel book 1 and 2, because people are such a big fan of Griffin. He was not in my prequel because when I released it, he didn't exist in the world yet. So now that he exists in the world, I'm adding 3 Griffin short stories to the prequel, because the prequel has 3 Alex and 3 Aaron stories in it. So in the omnibus, the prequel will also have 3 Griffin stories, because everybody loves Griffin. They want more of Griffin. So like I said, I give the readers what they want. They're all like, I want more Griffin. Okay, I'll give you more Griffin then.
We all love a morally gray character.
He's so much fun. Yes. I can't blame them, because I love Griffin too.
Super, super fun. Thank you again for being here. Say your website one more time, and all the links will be in the description too.
AliceHannah.com. So just my name.com.
Thank you. And the name of the series is The Head, the Heart, and the Air, right?
Yes.
Thank you for being here. And we will catch up when your next book comes out too.
Thanks for having me. Bye. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Finding the Magic podcast. I'm your host, author and podcaster, Tricia Copeland, and I love getting behind the scenes. If you like the podcast, make sure to subscribe and stop in each week to discover new authors and books. Thanks for listening, and until next time, keep finding the magic.